This is Ralph Schoutenman for Taking Aim. Maya is not with us today. I've just come back from another trip in South Asia. Maya's got affairs to deal with in the Rancho Mirage Desert area. It's a family business. So today I'm going to do Taking Aim on my own. We'll be back, of course, together, as always, with you next week. Our program today is The Crucible of Gaza, Rending the Flesh of Palestine. If you open the pages of Newsweek's cover story, Why Gaza Matters, New Violence and Hatreds and a Growing Radical Threat for America's Hopes for the Middle East, you will find the official fiction as to what are the dynamics of the crisis in Gaza as it is described. A 140-square-mile strip of land under the Mediterranean Sea along Israel's western borders, how the Newsweek article describes Gaza, packed with 1.4 million Palestinians, most of them desperately poor. Newsweek admits that Gaza was occupied by Israeli troops until late 2005, and Gaza is now described as Hamas's private enclave and an ungovernable font of terror. To drive home the racist point, the article by Kevin Perino, which describes the circumstances and the dynamics of what is unfolding in Gaza, is called Back to the Stone Age. Back to the Stone Age, indeed. In a confidential report leaked last week, United Nations envoy Alvaro de Soto wrote, "The United States has clearly pushed for this confrontation." De Soto recounts hearing U.S. officials inform him twice, "I like this violence twice," was stated to him at envoys' meetings in Washington. De Soto states, "The United States fanned the flames of this internal Palestinian conflict." Chaim Malka of Washington Center for Strategic and International Studies confirms this. De Soto's 50-page memorandum and report is a delineation of long-standing plans on the part of the United States and the Zionist state to create a internecine bloodletting in Gaza. Ephraim Snei, Israel's deputy defense minister, immediately responded by saying, "Dialogue is a non-starter. This will be worse than Mogadishu. Our Apache helicopter gunships will do our talking for them." And as the UNRWA director of Gaza operations described it, Gaza was already on the verge of a humanitarian crisis even before the latest round. Unemployment runs at over 50% in good times. It has shot up another 50% since. We're talking about 75% unemployment. One Israeli began by describing what the policy of the government will be. They are withholding $55 million each month in Palestinian customs receipts, all forms of payment, all forms of assets that are the Palestinian populations in Gaza are being seized. Customs receipts. Government salaries have been stopped. The March IMF World Bank report, the real GDP has fallen from 5 to 10% and almost 40% below the 1999 level. It is a hollowing out of the Palestinian economy by design, and that's a quote according to the study. And so what we're looking at here is a policy of attrition. No less is it applied in Gaza than in the West Bank. We described in the last three programs the process in the West Bank through which the entire area of the West Bank is in turn not just into a giant prison camp, but in essence a giant concentration camp. 35-foot walls punctuated with barbed wire encampments, the population and the villages cut off from their land, the Palestinians not allowed to use the main roads, confined to dirt roads, running into military checkpoints everywhere they move, every 5 miles, military checkpoints. You can be held up there for hours. You can be disappeared. That's the daily reality of Palestinian life. And here is the report by Reuters on June 17th, countering the official propaganda. After Gaza, the question is, who was overthrowing whom? And it states, this is the Reuters report, The United States government began to lay the ground for Mahmoud Abbas to dismiss the Hamas-led Palestinian government at least a year before. Western Israeli and Palestinian official sources acknowledged over the weekend that far from being an ad hoc response to Hamas, Abbas's declaration of a state of emergency and his replacement of the Hamas-elected prime minister with Western candidate Salam Fayyad marked the culmination of months of backroom deliberations, planning, and U.S. prodding. Who, brothers and sisters, is Salam Fayyad, who has been arbitrarily declared the new prime minister without election? He is a member of the World Bank. He is a part of the banking elite. He is part of the ruling class, designs for exploitation that cover not just Palestine, but the region at large. He is an instrument of Washington and its intelligence agencies, as indeed we will show the Fatah and the Palestinian Authority of Mahmoud Abbas are as well. In the end, the article continues, Abbas was pressured to act against Hamas. The pressure was great, if not greater, coming from Washington and, of course, from Israel. But they were pushing on an open door. Indeed, Hamas's leaders knew what was going on, as senior diplomats said, according to Reuters. They knew Abbas was going to establish his authority and override the elected results and the elected government. They read it in the papers like everyone else. Exactly who was overthrowing whom is a fair question, said International Crisis Group analyst Moeen Rabbani. Hamas is merely defending their election victory, whereas Abbas is defending what? You had powerful elements who were lined up to accomplish this. Edward Abington, Abbas's longtime advisor and Washington lobbyist, said the Bush administration made its plans and intentions known to Mahmoud Abbas immediately after Hamas was elected in early 2006. Abbas was told, Hamas is an illegitimate organization. We will do everything necessary to force it out of power, unquote. The Reuters report continues. Abington recounts a meeting as long ago as last July at which Abbas said to me, the Americans are urging me to kick out the government and to create an emergency government. Abbas was reluctant to get into the front confrontation because he did not have an ounce of popular support. He stated, it is forced on me. Western officials said Abbas was able to move swiftly this week because the advance work had already been done. In a closed-door briefing with U.S. lawmakers earlier this year, a senior U.S. official said, we will have Abbas rule by decree for 6 to 12 months before elections are risked again. So it's very clear here, brothers and sisters, current and former U.S. officials are acknowledging that this is an imperial design. This was a contrivance. And indeed, the U.S. security funds, nearly $60 million, coordinated by Lieutenant General Keith Dayton, were, in fact, part of the process through which this political result was implemented. The Israeli Public Security Minister, Avi Dichter, confirms the basic design here. Analyst Rabbani said Washington was preparing with weapons and with funds to accomplish these results. Now, the dynamics are spelled out even more clearly by Reuters as the report continues. Western and Palestinian officials acknowledge that Washington fanned the flames as soon as Hamas and Fatah formed a short-lived unity government in March. U.S. officials pushed Abbas into giving Mohammed Dahlan control over security and into deploying Fatah forces against the government throughout Gaza. We were clearly backing an armed Palestinian military faction against another, and the other being the government in case. And the policy has resulted in what we see now. There are consequences. There are consequences, said Levitt, now at the Washington Institute for the Near East. One of them is that you can't expect the West to embrace people like this, referring to the elected government in Gaza. And the same scenario is spelled out again in The Observer, by Peter Beaumont, the foreign affairs editor of the London Observer and republished in The Guardian on Sunday, June 17th. "Those who denied the poll results are the real coup plotters," is the headline. Here's how democracy works in the Alice in Wonderland world of Palestinian politics under the tutelage of the United States and international community. After years of being hectored to hold elections and adopt democratic norms, Palestinians duly elected Hamas with 44% of the vote. As Jimmy Carter observed at the time, it was a free, fair, accurate expression of the desires of the Palestinian people, sick of the uselessness, corruption, and gangsterism of Fatah. And what we're describing here when we speak here, when the Observer speaks of uselessness, corruption, and gangsterism, is a CIA-directed comprador class that was administering the politics of occupation and oppression on behalf of the United States and the Israeli state itself. What we have here, and that is the meaning of Oslo for many, many years. Maya and I, through our work in the Committee for the Defense of Palestinian and Lebanese people and for the Palestine Campaign, have diagnosed the nature of the Zionist state and characterized the illusion of a so-called two-state solution as nothing other than amnesty for Israel. For this putative state was designed to occur in 17% of Palestine, within all the essential water and land already confiscated by the Israelis, with a full-scale settlement program targeting 95% of the area of the West Bank, with a series of plans, the Star Plan, the Yalon Plan, the Arlon Plan, to carve Palestinian areas in the West Bank into little Swiss cheeses of areas to which those local populations would be confined. They make the Bantustans of South Africa look generous by comparison. And returning to the crisis that has been contrived, as the headline in The Observer says on Sunday, who are the real coup plotters? Now, after months of the financial embargo of the Hamas-led government by the United States and Europe, after the funding and propping up of Fatah's President Mahmoud Abbas, after the slow crushing squeeze on Palestinian society leading to its social disintegration, we have achieved what we wanted: a virtual civil war in Gaza, the polarization of Palestinian society, a government dissolved by decree, an enforcement apparatus of basically a thug, namely Dahlan, and now a declared new prime minister, Salam Fayyad, appointed on direction and with the explicit blessing of the United States. This is the Observer. The reality is that the only people who are behind Salam Fayyad are European and U.S. diplomats. So yesterday, President Bush and the other members of the quartet got what they had designed. Abbas trooped dutifully in to see the U.S. Consul General in Jerusalem with Mohammed Dahlan, the man credited with beginning the cycle of violence in Gaza, in tow. And Mohammed Dahlan's cycle of violence entailed assassination of cadre of Hamas, a torture center through which hundreds, if not thousands, of people had passed ad seriatim, the boycott of U.S. monies to the Palestinian government in place. In essence, the conditions were prepared. So the article in The Observer and The Guardian concludes, so which was the real coup? The gangsters allied to Fatah terrorized Gaza for 1 year. This is the language of the London Observer. The gangsters who terrorized Gaza for a year. And Abbas's unconstitutional moves yesterday with America's backing, he concludes, that is the real coup. Either way, it is the Palestinians who will suffer. And indeed, the same theme is picked up by Virginia Tilley in the Electronic Intifada on June 18th. Whose coup exactly? Having sacked Ismail Haniyeh of Hamas, dissolved his democratically elected government, President Mahmoud Abbas has installed Salam Fayyad as the new prime minister, to the clear delight of Washington and the West. Fayyad's new emergency government has been sworn in, that the new Palestine Authority has no power in the West Bank and none at all in Gaza is the glaring problem with this pageantry. Bitter jokes about a two-state solution consisting of the West Bank and Gaza Strip are circulating. The new emergency government is illegal, too. According to the Basic Law of Palestine, as amended in 2003, which serves as the constitution of the Palestine Authority, Abbas can do neither of these things, nor can the new emergency government claim any democratic mandate. Abbas and the Fayyad government are ruling by decree outside the framework of the Basic Law. And that is, in essence, what we are dealing with here, the arbitrariness of coups that are engendered by a design that is intended to fragment the population and to drive them into a condition of starvation. Crocodile tears, the Gaza cage, is how Yuri Avneri, the Israeli peace activist, analyzes it on June 16th and 17th, and he asks, what happens when 1.5 million human beings are imprisoned in a tiny arid territory, cut off from their compatriots and from any contact with the outside world, deliberately starved by economic blockade, unable to feed their families? The population of the Gaza Strip is a sociological experiment set up by Israel, the United States, and the European Union. They are treated as guinea pigs. And when human beings react exactly as they are expected, when they are crowded into a small area in miserable conditions, when they are subject to murderous attack, they respond by doing what? They rebel. And so Uri Avneri lays out the realities on the ground that define the crucible of Gaza. And to this is the ready response of the Zionist state, because this is a design that we've seen in place since the invasion of Iraq. This is a design that encompasses the false start attack in Lebanon, which was intended to go on to Syria. This is a design which is preparing for the forthcoming attack on Iran. Here, brothers and sisters, is the account in yesterday's New York Sun. Israel readies for a war in Gaza. This is by Benny Avni, staff reporter. As Prime Minister Olmert begins his visit to America, his newly appointed Defense Minister Ehud Barak is planning a military incursion into Gaza. Politicians and analysts are starting a major debate of whether the new Gaza situation calls for a major military incursion into Gaza to crush the nascent Hamas state. And of course, this plan for war is conjoined to the claim that Hamas is armed by Iran. And indeed, that leads to the now adopted term of Hamastan, racist in its content, Hamastan, associating Hamas with the stands, those nations that have been deprived of their sovereignty, but who are associated with resistance to U.S. imperial design. Israel now, according to this report, and according to what Olmert told members of the Conference of Presidents of the major American Jewish organizations, they are preparing to act. And the article states, Israel is surrounded by powerful Iranian-backed armies and militias on its northern and southern borders. The Sunday Times of London reported that Barak is planning a 20,000-troop invasion of Gaza to destroy much of Hamas's military capability in days. And the Israeli UN ambassador Dan Gilliman has confirmed that there are these discussions. He claims that the military ground operation has not been put into operational mode, but that is countered by the documents that have been seized by Hamas in Gaza. As the article continues in the New York Sun, Gaza sees reams of documents and materials belonging to the Central Intelligence Agency and intelligence services from Britain to Egypt that have propped up Mr. Abbas's Fatah party. and the documents disclose that this is all by design. Indeed, on the basis of these documents, Olmert's now floating plan has been clearly exposed as something long in the works. Deploying a force in Gaza, the Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni said such a force will be there to fight smugglers of weapons from Egypt into Gaza. They are laying the bases and laying the grounds for claiming that Egypt is smuggling weapons into Gaza from Syria to Iran. And as the designs of the Yodid Yinon plan in 1979 and 80 laid clear, dismantling each Arab state into its ethnic and religious components, adds Syriatum, Egypt high on the list. Ron Ben Yishai, the veteran military analyst, the Sun article continues, disclosed on the website Ynet for Yedioth Aharonot that Israel's army will enter Gaza and after, quote, a significant dismantling of Hamas's military infrastructure, Israel will mobilize its allies to create a multinational occupational force in Gaza. And indeed, the rival of Ehud Barak, who is going to, according to this description in the Sun, as Minister of Defense, organize the invasion, Benjamin Netanyahu of the Likud, stated during a tour of the Golan Heights that departures from Lebanon and Gaza originally begat Hezbollahstan and Hamasstan, and such withdrawals will never be repeated, neither in the Golan Heights nor in Samaria, which is the Zionist term for the West Bank, Netanyahu stated. And indeed, Netanyahu, who suffered a spectacular election defeat in 2006, now is reported to have a considerable edge in all political polls over Mr. Barak and over Olmert. And so we see the conditions have been created for the re-election or repositioning of Netanyahu, who is a architect with the U.S. Ruling class of the events of 9/11 themselves. The category of terror organized through conferences by Netanyahu with the backing of Bush Sr., George Shultz, Alexander Haig, former Secretary of State James Baker, in conferences on terror in Tel Aviv and then in Washington, long anteceding the events of 9/11, but anticipating and preparing for the new Pearl Harbor that would create the conditions for what is unfolding before our eyes. Haaretz, in the report on June 17, confirms what we have been discussing here, brothers and sisters. Barak planning military operation in Gaza within weeks. Newly elected Labor Party chairman Ehud Barak, set to take over as defense minister, is planning to launch a military operation at aimed at combating Hamas in Gaza. The operation will include 20,000 troops, will be aimed at destroying Hamas's military capabilities in a short period of time. Barak has already asked the IDF, that's the Israeli Defense Forces, to draw up detailed plans for the deployment of troops inside the Gaza Strip. A close aide to Barak stated that Israel will not allow this Hamasstan within its borders, and an attack on Gaza is inevitable. The question is not if, but when, the report in Haaretz concludes. And that report is amplified in an article by Uzi Manaimi, again in the Sunday Times, describing how the new defense minister, Ehud Barak, is planning the attack within weeks. The article states that Israeli forces are expecting to be confronted by about 12,000 Hamas fighters and that they expect to defeat them in short order. You can only begin to imagine the bloodbath that is being prepared for the suffering population of Gaza. Akiva Eldar, in the Haaretz of June 18th, runs an article called Sharon's Dream. If Ariel Sharon were to hear the news from Gaza and the West Bank, he would call his loyal aide, Dov Weisglass, and say with a big laugh, "We did it, Doobie." Sharon may be in coma, but his plan is alive and kicking. Everybody is now talking about the state of Hamastan. In his house, they called it a Bantustan, after the South African protectorate's design to perpetuate apartheid. This article in the Israeli publication Haaretz continues. Just as in the Palestinian territories, blacks and coloreds in South Africa were given limited autonomy in the least fertile areas, and those who remained outside these isolated enclaves were disconnected from each other, received the status of foreign workers without civil rights. This article continues in Haaretz of yesterday. Italian Foreign Minister Massimo D'Alema told Israeli friends shortly before he was elected prime minister, Sharon told him, the Bantustan plan is the suitable solution to our conflict. Indeed, the way being paved for the erasing of 1.4 million Arabs from the demographic balance. Erasing 1.4 million Arabs from the demographic balance, that's the population of Gaza. Erasing them, Egyptian Foreign Minister Ahmed Abu Ghait warned Shimon Peres during a visit to Israel that this plan will cause the Gaza Strip to explode. Israel's violation of movement and access, an agreement signed with U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, made clear that Sharon was plotting to sever Gaza from the West Bank, and that was a few months before the Hamas victory in the Palestinian parliamentary elections. This plan was in place before, alongside the severance of Gaza from the West Bank, a policy now called isolation, the Sharon Peres government and the Olmert Peres government that succeeded it would carry out the Bantustan program in the West Bank. The Jordan Valley will be separated from the West Bank, the south severed from the north, all three areas severed from East Jerusalem. This is a five states for two peoples plan, a contiguous state surrounded by settlement blocks for Israel and isolated enclaves for the Palestinians. This article describes in Haaretz yesterday Sharon's dream. The plan is being implemented on the ground via the separation wall, the network of roadblocks deep inside the West Bank, the settlement expansion, the arbitrary orders by military commanders, the cantonized map that these dictated have left no room for even gestures by Mahmoud Abbas. And there it is, brothers and sisters. It states 8 years of rioting and terror ended in the liquidation of South Africa's Bantustan and their inclusion in a unified state governed by a black majority. This dream of protectorates, Hamastan and Gaza, Fatah enclaves in an occupied West Bank, is similarly the end of any solution. If we do not quickly wake up, we will be left with no choice between the plague of an apartheid regime and the cholera of the replacement of a Jewish state with a Palestinian state between the Jordan River and the sea, including the Gaza Strip, writes Akiva Eldor in Haaretz. That indeed is the agenda we can expect, because this relentless genocidal process of invading, occupying, subjecting the Palestinian population to a crisis of survival will lead only in one direction, brothers and sisters, as the masses of the region recognize the role of their country-selling regimes in implementing this murderous process. And here is Netanyahu. I warned of Hamastan. I warned this would happen. Before the last elections, I warned Hamastan will rise into existence, and it has done just that. We are seeing in Gaza the inevitable result of defeatist policies from withdrawal. Every piece of land we evacuate will be seized by radical Islam and by Iran, and rockets will be launched against us. That is the scenario of the soon-to-be-elected Prime Minister of Israel. Why isn't there a Hamastan in Judea and Samaria, he goes on? Because the IDF is there. This would be a second Iranian base, Netanyahu continues. The first Iranian base is in northern Israel. Now we have Hamastan, the second Iranian base in southern Israel. So we have it that the Iranian bases, which are the description of Netanyahu, of the Palestinian population in Lebanon and the Palestinian in refugee camps, and the Palestinian population of the refugee camps of Gaza, are the Hamastans and the Hezbollahstans that the Zionists associate with Iran as the pretext and the occasion and the opportunity for carrying out an attack, not only in Gaza, in Palestine at large, but an attack on Iran itself. And
hi, this is Tony Trischka, and you're listening to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
This is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman, brothers and sisters. The Gaza Crucible, the rending of the flesh of Palestine, our program today. Let me remind you, brothers and sisters, that I will be speaking on Saturday, June 23rd at the Ethical Culture Society in a Taking Aim WBAI fundraiser. This is a big fundraiser for WBAI and for Free Speech Radio. I'll be addressing the terror state and 9/11, brothers and sisters. There will be a reception at 6 o'clock. The talk will begin at 7 at the Ethical Culture Society. Please purchase your tickets now. You can go to the website of Taking Aim, takingaimradio.com. Go to the WBAI website. Remember, once again, June 23rd, Saturday, the reception will be at 6 o'clock. My talk will begin at 7, and we'll have a discussion, brothers and sisters, the terror state and 9/11 at the Ethical Culture Society. Please go to the website of takingaimradio.com and the website of WBAI and purchase tickets. I want to see you there, brothers and sisters. The realities of what is happening on the ground to the people of Palestine is but the little continuation of the plans of 9/11, the new Pearl Harbor for permanent war, preemptive war, engulfing the entire region. And the unfolding of these events in Gaza and in the West Bank are preparatory to an attack on Iran and beyond. Indeed, the delineation of what is happening here has been well described in the Nation on June 16th by Naomi Klein in an article called "Gaza, Not Just a Prison, But a Laboratory." Israeli army camps hastily assembled in the Golan Heights. Spy satellites over Iran and Syria, war with Hezbollah, a scandal-plagued political class in Israel, a total loss of public faith. Indeed, she says, the Israeli economy isn't booming despite the political chaos that devours the headlines, but because of it. This phase of development, she writes, dates back to the mid-90s, when Israel was in the vanguard of the information revolution and the most technologically dependent economy in the world. After the dot-com bubble burst in 2000, Israel's economy, totally subsidized by the United States, was devastated. Then came 9/11, and suddenly vast profit vistas opened up for any company that claimed it could spot terrorists in crowds seal borders from attack, extract confessions from closed-mouthed prisoners. Within 3 years, she writes in The Nation, large parts of Israel's tech economy had been radically repurposed. Israel went from inventing the networking tools to selling fences to an apartheid planet. The country's most successful entrepreneurs are using Israel's status as a fortress state, surrounded by supposed furious enemies, as a 24-hour-a-day showroom on how to enjoy safety during constant war. Israel, the fourth largest arms dealer in the world. Israel's military trade, focusing on the flow of weapons into the country, U.S.-made Caterpillar bulldozers used to destroy homes in the West Bank, in Lebanon, in Gaza, British companies supplying parts for F-16s, Israel's huge expanding export business, $1.2 billion in military products to the United States, up $270 million, Israel exporting $3.4 billion in armaments in 2006, a billion more than it received in U.S. aid, Israel now the fourth largest arm dealer in the world, overtaking Britain, overtaking Great Britain. This is a country of 5 million people that receives close to $10 billion between aid and loans and disguised subsidy annually from the United States. Before 9/11, Homeland Security barely existed as an industry. By the end of this year, Israel exports in this sector will reach $1.2 billion alone, an increase of 20%. Key products and services, high-tech fences, unmanned drones, biometric IDs, video and audio surveillance gear, air passenger profiling, prisoner interrogation systems, precisely the tools and technologies Israel is using to lock in the occupied territories, she writes. And that is why the chaos in Gaza, as she calls it, and the rest of the region does not threaten the bottom line in Tel Aviv and actually boosts it, because Israel has turned endless war into a brand asset, pitching its uprooting, occupation, and containment of the Palestinian people as a one-half-century head start in a global war on terror, she writes. Next week, the most established of the Israeli armament companies, 30 Homeland Security companies launched in the last 6 months alone, lavish government and U.S. subsidies that have transformed the Israeli army into incubators for security and novel weapons startups. Remember these drones and computer-controlled aircraft? And think again about how those planes crashed into the World Trade Center or towers, brothers and sisters, on September 11th. The most established of these companies in Europe for the Paris Air Show, the arms industry's equivalent to Fashion Week. One of the Israeli companies exhibited suspect detection systems showcasing its Cogito 1002, a sci-fi-looking security kiosk that asks air travelers to answer computer-generated questions tailored to their country of origin, holding their hands on biofeedback sensors and device reading the body's reaction to questions, flagging passengers as suspects. And the article continues in The Nation, not just a prison, but a laboratory. Hundreds of other security startup companies representing multi-millions, even billions of dollars, SDS boasts that it has been founded by veterans of Israel's secret police, and all its products were road-tested on the Palestinians. The company has tested its biofeedback terminals in the West Bank. It states that the concept is supported and enhanced by knowledge acquired and assimilated for the analysis of thousands of case studies of Palestinians in Israel. A star of the Paris Air Show is the Israel giant Elbit, showcasing its Hermes 450 and 900 unmanned air vehicles. Used for what, brothers and sisters? These drones have been used on bombing missions throughout Gaza. They are used secretly across the Middle East. They are exported abroad. The Hermes has been used at the American-Mexican border. It has been used within the United States. The article continues, the Cogito 1002 terminals are now used at unnamed U.S. airports. Elbit, one of the companies behind Israel's security barrier, partnering with Boeing to construct the Department of Homeland Security's $2.5 billion virtual border fence around the United States. The chickens are coming home, the roost, brothers and sisters. The border walls, the border fence, the ghetto fence, the Warsaw ghetto wall that hems in the Palestinians into a giant concentration camp will be constructed in the United States across our borders. Israel's policy of sealing off the occupied territories with checkpoints and walls, in which has led the article by Naomi Klein in The Nation states, which has led human rights activists to compare Gaza and the West Bank to open-air prisons. It has resulted from an explosion of the Israeli Homeland Security Center. And by the way, Naomi Klein has written a book called The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism, which lays out this critique, which she so ably documents in her article in The Nation. She quotes that Hannibal Lecter of American journalism, Thomas Friedman, who is celebrating the brilliance of Israelis entrepreneurs. He says, Israel has struck oil, but the oil is the imagination of its techie entrepreneurs. Yes, the oil is the war on terror. The oil is the state of constant fear that creates a bottomless global demand for devices that watch, listen, and contain and target suspects in the population at large. And fear is their ultimate renewal resource, ends the article by Naomi Klein, seminal in its elucidation of what underlies the crucible of Gaza, as it does the politics, underlying politics of treason at the top at 9/11. And brothers and sisters, to elucidate further what nature of weaponry has been tested out across the West Bank and Gaza, here's the report by James Brooks of 2004, the Israeli poison gas attacks. New Israeli gas causes mass convulsions across the Gaza Strip. February 12, 2001, days after the landslide election of Ariel Sharon, throughout Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip, Israelis open up with machine gun fire and tank shells, a barrage that lasts long into the night. It might have just been another day of the occupation, except that the Israeli army was lobbying mysterious new gas canisters throughout the streets, courtyards, refugee camps, and houses, including Khan Yunis and the Harbi refugee camp. The people of Khan Yunis, the report continues, are utterly familiar with tear gas. Their neighborhood has long been known as the most heavily tear gas area in the occupied Palestinian territory. But no one in Khan Yunis recalled the strange canister and their multicolored smoke. None of the instant irritation of the eyes and breathing passages caused by the tear gas generally used seemed to be present here. The gas was odorless as well. It's harmless. This gas is nothing, soldiers said. The soldiers threw more. After minutes, a fragrance emerged from the gas like mint. One resident later recalled, the smell was good. You wanted to breathe more. You felt good when you inhaled it. A girl reported, it tastes like sugar. The smell is sweet. The smoke was white, then yellow, then black. The smoke changed colors like a rainbow. The gas canister landed on homes throughout the area. Now black smoke billowed thickly. Neighbors rushed to help, thinking the homes had caught fire. People began to realize that the gas was not harmless after all. People recalled, 15 minutes later, severe agonizing stomach cramps. The stomach was being torn apart. Burning sensation in the chest. People couldn't breathe. They began to vomit. They went into seizures and spasms, and they collapsed. 40 were admitted to Al-Nasser Hospital Khan Yunis in a state of total nervous breakdown, suffering from spasms and seizure. 16 were immediately transferred to the intensive care unit. The Israeli use of gas caused generalized convulsions. Dr. Salah Sami Al-Amal at the hospital reported that the hospital received immediately 130 patients suffering from these gas attacks. Bewildered medical personnel stated, quote, "We have never seen anything like this." They were describing the area of Gaza called Tufa. "The victims are jumping up and down, left and right. They're thrashing their limbs around. They're suffering convulsions and hysteria. They are shaking. They are already unconscious. The convulsions and the vomiting and the pain return. It goes on for days and for weeks." On February 13th, Israeli forces lobbed these poison gas canisters into neighborhoods throughout. 40 new gas systems, including children from 1 to 5 years, arrived at Al-Nasser Hospital and at the hospitals of the Palestine Red Crescent Society. The news began to trickle out that Israel was using new and dreadful weaponry. AFX News Limited reported Palestinian security forces have accused the Israeli army of using nerve gas. The BBC picked up the Voice of Palestine report. Specialized believe that this is an internationally banned nerve gas. Those who inhale the gas, the report stated, suffered complete breakdowns and are vomiting blood. The next day, the Deutsche Presseagentur news service reported Israel is using a powerful type of gas, causing convulsions and spasms. The quote attributed Dr. Yasser Sheikh Ali Al-Nasser at the hospital of Khan Yunis. 80 Palestinians arrived reporting that the white smoky gas that has been used has caused convulsions. The Palestine Center for Human Rights describes that Palestinians and mostly children are going into spasm and suffocation due to gas inhalation. The Egyptian weekly Al-Aram, British journalist Graham Usher writes, the civilians are being incapacitated by a new form of toxic gas. The same day, President Yasser Arafat publicly accuses Israel of using importing poison gas, reported by CNN. Israel Communications' Ben Elizer calls the reports of gas casualties in Yunis incorrect, but then the Israeli ministries fall silent and refuse further comment. Indeed, the report, which is a detailed and elaborate report, describes the continuous use. There's a timeline of the poison gas attacks, February 12, 13, 14, 18th in the year in question, March 2nd, 26th, and 30th, the same gas used in Bethlehem in the West Bank. These are elaborate reports. I could go further into the timeline of the poison gas attacks, but I want to cover as well something called auto kill zones that have been implemented in the West Bank and Gaza. Robo-snipers. The Defense News reporter Barbara Opal-Rome reports plans for the C-Shoot system calling for the mounting of 0.5 caliber automated machine guns in each of pillboxes interspersed along Gaza, connected via fiber optics to remote operations stations in a command and control center. The machine gun mounted stations serve as a robotic sniper capable of enforcing 1,500 meter deep no-go zones across Gaza. The guns are based on the Samson remote control weapons station. The pillboxes are positioned at intervals of hundreds of meters across Gaza. Jane's Defense Weekly observes they are protected and secured with alarms and sensors and steel doors and feature retractable armored covers that to protect the weapon stations. What are these weapons? Dense inert metal explosives. Dense inert metal explosives known as DIME, an experimental type of explosive with an effective blast radius used throughout urban areas. And indeed, here is the report in Haaretz, the 10th of November, 2006, Italian probe, Israel using new weapon prototypes across Gaza Strip by Maren Rappaport. Investigative reports to be aired on Italian television establish that Israel has used an experimental weapon in the Gaza Strip, causing especially serious physical injuries, amputated limbs, and severe burns. The weapon, similar to one developed by the United States military known as DIME, causes powerful and lethal blasts within a small radius. The Italian report is based on eyewitness accounts of its medical doctors throughout the Gaza Strip and tests carried out in Italian laboratories. The investigative team is the same that exposed several months ago the use by U.S. forces in Iraq of phosphorus bombs throughout Fallujah. Israel Air Force Major General retired Yitzhak Ben Israel, head of the IDF's weapon development program, told Italian reporters that the idea behind the weapon is to allow those targeted to be hit. The investigation by RAI 24 News followed reports by Gaza-based doctors of inexplicably serious injuries across Gaza, exceptionally large number of wounded who lost legs, completely burned bodies, injuries unaccompanied by metal shrapnel. The doctors claimed that they removed particles from wounds that could not be seen in an X-ray machine. The wounded were hit by munitions launched from drones. Dr. Habas al-Wahid, head of the emergency room at the Shuhada al-Aqsa in Deir el-Balah, told reporters that the legs of the injured coming into the hospital were sliced from their bodies as if a saw were used to cut through the bone. There were signs of heat and burns near the point of amputation, but no signs that the dismemberment was caused by metal fragments. Dr. Juma Sakav, Shifa Hospital in Gaza City, the doctors found small entry wounds on the bodies of the wounded and the dead. A powder was found on the victim's body and within their internal organs. The powder was like microscopic shrapnel. The Italian investigative team raised the fact that the IDF is making use of a weapon similar in character to DIME, dense inert metal explosives developed for the U.S. military. The official website of the United States Air Force Laboratory described it as a focused lethality weapon which accurately destroys the body. According to the site, the projectile comprises a carbon fiber casing filled with tungsten powder and explosives. In the explosion, tungsten particles, a metal capable of conducting very high temperatures, spread across over a radius of 4 meters, cause internal injury, burning, and death. The U.S.-based website Defense Tech describes this weaponry, an incredibly destructive blast in small areas. The destruction power of the mixture causes far more damage than pure explosives. The impact of the micro shrapnel causes similar but more powerful effects than a shock wave. The Italian reporters have sent samples of the particles found in the wounds of the injured to a laboratory at the University of Parma. Dr. Carmela Vaccaio stated that the samples produced a very high concentration of carbon in the presence of unusual materials, including copper, aluminum, and tungsten, in line with the evidence that this weapon in question is DIME. This is a technology that allows the striking of individuals, of populations. The weapon is not banned by international law. The weapon is a highly carcinogenic weapon, extremely harmful to the environment and to future generations. Physicians for Human Rights has written to Defense Minister Amir Peretz, demanding explanations for the injuries described and documented in Palestinians across Gaza. That is the reality. DIME, the new Israeli weapon, described in the UK Independent, which has amplified its report with documentation of using uranium-enriched phosphorus weapons throughout Lebanon, Robert Fisk's account, The Mystery of Israel's Secret Uranium Bomb, OTOH, Dense Inert Metal Explosives DIME, the experimental type of explosives being tested on the Palestinians these days. That is the laboratory that the Nation article describes. Gaza is not just a prison camp, says Naomi Klein. It is a laboratory, brothers and sisters. This is the genocidal meaning of imperialism in the present moment, and this is the nature of the onslaught on the Palestinian people under the cover of going after the elected government of Hamas. The irony of ironies, of course, is that all sectors here, the Palestine Authority of Mahmoud Abbas, which is effectively run by the Central Intelligence Agency, the torture centers and the policing that have been conducted by Dahlan across Gaza, the equivalent in the way the Palestinian Authority polices the population across the West Bank, these are what? These are the local policing comprador class implementation of the imperial and Zionist design intended to do what? By attrition, by expulsion, by genocidal onslaught, by apartheid-like confinement into a great prison camp, concentration camp, which is the West Bank and Gaza, by all brutal means necessary to subjugate the people of Palestine, brothers and sisters. Abbas aide, Haaretz reports, Fayyad has completed the formation of an emergency government. He will present it to the Palestinian Authority Chairman Mahmoud Abbas. Salam Fayyad, the internationally respected World Bank official, favored by Condoleezza Rice in the United States, designated as the prime minister of the new government in what Hamas has described as a coup d'etat. That is the coup d'etat. Hamas has a majority in parliament. Half of Hamas's deputies have been arrested. Half of the deputies elected to the parliament have been arrested. The consequence is that they cannot accomplish a quorum in order to prevent Abbas from declaring an illegal state of emergency and extending it for another 30 days. That requires the approval of two-thirds of the parliament. But they have arrested the Hamas-elected members of the parliament, brothers and sisters. The facade of democratic entitlement is ridiculous in the eyes of the reality on the ground. Fayyad is forming an emergency government in the West Bank that is nothing but an instrument of the plotters. This is the bitter legacy of the 1967 war, 40 years the anniversary thereof. That is the legacy of what it represents. The torment on the ground, as Shimon Peres described it, the Six-Day War took 80 minutes to execute a plan that we had in place for 10 years. And indeed, brothers and sisters, the garrison state of Israel, we have a very acute description in the report in the World Socialist website. Six families control 40% of the shares traded on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange. 12 of the 17 economic conglomerates, including the banks and commercial media throughout Israel, a handful of billionaires. That is the reality on the ground in Israel as it is in the United States. It is a ruling class, brothers and sisters, that is visiting suffering on a huge scale, concentrated in Palestine, but not confined. This is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman, brothers and sisters. Please come to the Ethical Culture Society Saturday, June 23rd. Go to the website, WBAI and takingaimradio.com. Purchase your tickets. See you at the reception at 6. Come to the talk at 7. Saturday, June 23rd. Be with you next week, brothers and sisters.
This is
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Join us Saturday evening, June 23rd, for a special event with Ralph Schoenman at the Ethical Culture Society.
This WBAI fundraiser includes a reception at 6 p.m., a lecture and discussion at 7 p.m. on 9/11 and the terror state.
Check the WBAI website for more information. Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen is broadcast every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Mark your calendars, Saturday, June 23rd.
Looking forward to seeing you, brothers and sisters, at the Ethical Culture Society.